Test 1, 2, test, test. Can you hear me? Can't hear me, can you?
You're out here.
Yeah.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I'll just hear you through here.
Okay. Bob.
Yeah, here we are.
Happy holidays. The 2 weeks in a row now.
Tell Kent to turn up the
radio. Yeah, we'll get feedback, though. We'll get feedback problems.
Oh, too much feedback?
That's just not the volume knob there. It's not...
Kent doesn't want to do it. Like, he just got his package from Columbia, and he's enjoying it.
Bob, can you turn it up? Is that as simple as that? Or, hello? We're having technical problems here.
Gotcha.
Okay, so just the volume.
Technical expertise.
Well, Bob, did you have a nice Christmas? Welcome. Church of the Subgenius, second show in a row. Final show before the new year.
And
lots to talk about.
Yeah. I didn't celebrate Christmas. You know, it's not in our church mandate. Nothing. No need to talk about that. You can hear me, right, Mike?
Perfectly.
Yeah.
A-okay.
I got the footage here. The documentation. We're a little, the lights went on, then they went off, and they came back on. Philly worked behind the scenes, did a lot of groundwork. So, Mike, the opening topic is John Lennon's going to be made a lot of within a year. It's going to be the 10th anniversary of his assassination, and I thought we'd scoop everybody, and it's the Dr. Beter one, side one. We'd scoop everybody and explain how he was killed and why. And also, it's appropriate to hear this now because Dr. Beter made the explanation of John Lennon's murder, I think it was about 6 weeks after the murder, early tape, January 81. And just this fall, a book came out called Who Killed John Lennon by Fenton Bresler. It owes some research to Mae Brussel and some other good researchers like Walter Boward. But it's a book that explores the possibility as much as he can and get it in print that John Lennon was killed by a mind-controlled zombie. All right? Mark Chapman. If you want to get that book, it's at... I've seen a lot of copies up on the second floor at the world's biggest bookstore, and I've seen it at Britnell's, too. But the book's main thesis is the point that the mind-control mechanism was used on Mark Chapman, and that's exactly what Beter said was done. I want to play Dr. Beter's statement to anticipate the orgy of nostalgia and memory and appreciation for John Lennon that'll happen within 12 months. It'll happen next December, right, Mike? So let's beat everybody, give the hard story, the facts, and lay down ground for future facts. So here's Dr. Beter, 9 years ago, explaining what happened to John Lennon and why he was murdered. And this was just after Ronald Reagan was elected, and there was a battle in the White House between the Rockefellers and the Bolsheviks. The Rockefellers put in Ronald Reagan, and the Bolsheviks weren't too happy about that, so they took some action. So here it is, Dr. Beter on John Lennon.
Since I spoke with you last, the world was shocked, saddened, and angered by a seemingly senseless murder in New York City. The victim was the former Beatle and rock star. Lennon. Lennon was fond of saying that a rock star can say things without being killed for it. And after 5 years out of the public eye, Lennon was going back to work. Not because he needed the money, but because he had things to say. But the things he had to say this time, my friends, would have caused trouble for those who are maneuvering us into nuclear war. And so, a former fan of his was turned into a psychologically programmed assassin. This was done using the techniques I made public over 5 years ago in audio letter 5. And on the eve of his return to public life, John Lennon was silenced.
That's it?
Yeah, that's the, as far as we can go tonight. Maybe in 2 weeks I'll look up that audio letter, I think it was number 5 he said, and bring in the data on how these mind control techniques were developed and how they were used that Dr. Beter explains in that tape. But there it is. We scooped everybody. We gave the hard facts on what's happening. Dr. Beter had it down. And the facts now are coming out gradually through Fenton Bresler's book called Who Killed John Lennon? Mike, do you want to say anything about, it's been a remarkable year. I think the evidence of my work is surfacing all over the planet.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of tried to put an exclamation point on the decade by murdering Ceausescu myself. I did it myself. I arranged it to be broadcast all over the world. And, of course, that wasn't the real Ceausescu. I did some other stuff to the real Ceausescu, but we put a dummy out there as a robot to express what the people wanted to be.
It was interesting in the picture in the Globe and Mail on the front cover of his dead and frozen body. His eyes were wide open as he stared up into the camera. And such an image from a horrible B film.
Bad actor.
But obviously you've been busy. I think I think some of my skepticism has been eradicated with your wild predictions, which have all become true. I'm still not wild about the X's, and I think my skepticism will hold for the time being. But I think what you've said has been most insightful, and you've predicted a great many of the world events, and so what we have seen over the last week with everyone recapping the year and as being one of the most important years, one paper listed a number of years as being important years. They listed several. One was 1968 and one was 1989 and some of the war years, the 40s. And 89 was the year that went down in infamy, but of course you were predicting these things in 88. Yeah. So,
and I will feature, and I'm glad you brought that up because I have, put together some of my predictions I made for the record on October 16th, 1988 in Los Angeles. I was interviewed for a local radio station there, and they played the full interview. It's an hour and a half. They played 45 minutes on November 25th, and then the following 45 minutes the next Saturday, I guess it was December 2nd or something. And a copy was sent to me, and I went through it, and I was amazed at what I had said on October 16th in 1988. The X's themselves predicted that the Berlin Wall would go down in the fall of this year. They predicted it on November 20th, 1988. And, of course, that's why I'm the only one qualified to work with the X's. I scooped them by a month. I laid it out on October 16th. Now, about 2 months ago when the speed of events and world government retrieval started to come in, many of the journals said, who would have predicted this 4 months ago, 2 months ago, or 6 months ago, okay? The point is, I predicted it 12 months before that. And the three points, and they were major points. The only thing I didn't talk about was fusion technology. That's a big breakthrough. And though they tried to kill its image in the summer, there's lab reports coming in from all over the world now saying, yes, it's real, and we've got it. We're going to have cold fusion. What I predicted on October 16th, 88, was the decentralizing of the Gorbachev Empire, the freeing up of the Eastern European countries to go their own way. I predicted the reunification of Germany, and I predicted the UFO phenomenon, the startling reality of UFO's existence, which is, of course, reflecting the exit's existence, that this would come out in July 89, and I was right on, because the more public expression that came out of Russia was on Lenin's birthday, October 9th. That's why we have John Lennon on tonight. October 9th, 1989, the TASS news agency announced the supposed landing of the X's on September 27th. But in subsequent reviews of that phenomenon coming out of the Soviet Union, they reported that the first real important UFO contact happened in July in Russia. So my dating of that was amazingly accurate. Now, I don't remember everything that I say immediately, but I will remember everything if you press me on it. I can recall, but there's so much to talk about and so much to deal with that I have to voluntarily suppress, and create a little amnesia. So I was a bit surprised at what I had said, because I think the main effect this year for us and to create Mike's confidence in what this show means is that we really established what this show was about this year. The talk show format was what we really started to get into just the end of last year, and I think that's what we want to be, and it's community radio, and it's church on the air, and anybody can listen. As a matter of fact, if you don't want to hear my predictions, call in right now, 595-1478. We will play the predictions eventually, but there have been complaints, Mike, as a result of last week, that people can't get through. There are many subgeniuses that want to get on.
Oh.
So I want to say you can call in any time. If I'm telling some good new knowledge, good wisdom, interrupt me. It's okay. We got the rest of our existence to spell out that knowledge. Knowledge is not that important anymore. So
Yeah, I don't think the show has necessarily become too big for itself. Sometimes we have a lot of calls, other times one or two callers. And with the holiday season, maybe things will be a little slower tonight. I doubt it, though. I think I can't stress enough whether the calls are inquisitive or whether they make comments on the show itself.
They don't have to be verbal, even.
It's an extremely important element of the show,
yeah.
And it brings forth the community spirit and the church spirit as we all gather as one.
Yeah, I would say the reason this year became very important is because we established ourselves with a solid kind of a solid ground, a reality. And, of course, this rebounded and resonated through the whole world, so the world had to catch up to the fact we had established ourselves here in 1981, and the whole thing collapsed. I mean, we can really get into some good stuff in 1990 because all the cobwebs have been moved away.
Mm-hmm.
The world now has the real problems of media ecology to deal with. We don't have to deal with the problems of fake pink arguments over ideology or content. We got problems. We've got the very basic fact of discarnate and how that can't be translated back into hardware. And so the Eastern countries, these new groupings that are looking for an identity, are going to have to deal with the real problems of our time. And then that makes my work all the more important.
Well, we do have a caller. Do you want to go right to a caller?
Okay,
we can talk about this past year. Hello.
Bobby.
Yeah.
Hi.
Hello.
I just want to say, you've said many times on your show that subgeniuses don't really take part in the international scene and the, officials and that. So I was wondering why a lot of what you talk about has to do with the international conspiracies and scandals in other countries and why you think that has such a great effect if there's no subgeniuses in politics.
Well, I'm the first subgenius in politics, but to go back to your point, your first statement is that subgeniuses don't engage in the international official. You mean bureaucratic management level. That's what you mean, right?
Yeah, right, yeah, because it's all these specific scandals, it seems like it's not so important if you know that the basic hidden ground behind the whole scene is that it's a corrupt scene. And so why is it so necessary to understand all the...
The point is that many people don't know it's corrupt. And then once you point out the reason the public image of the politicians is made to look corrupt, which is that the real power is not in politics, it's behind the scenes. Therefore, you can see it in your popular TV programs, the popular cynicism about the public figures, the local lawyers, politicians, cops, and that. All those institutions have been wrecked in terms of public confidence in the cop shows over the last 15 years. So the scandals I point to are not the scandals of the George Bushes or the Brian Mulroney's. I point to the scandals of the oligarchs. And, for example, one big scandal is that...
But wouldn't that just create more mass confusion and paranoia than that's already being created?
Yeah, well, every emotion is obsolete. Okay, and if it works, it's obsolete. So to create the energy for a live, discarnate interaction, we can wake up any emotion as an art form, as an entertainment. So we wake up clarity, wake up paranoia, we wake up confusion, we wake up love, we wake up psychic violence, we wake up everything to get our sort of discarnate soul glands feeling the electric pressure, which makes us energy.
But the basic idea is that every person can create their own environment through their own private citadel of consciousness, as you've said many times.
Only if they know the hidden ground which annihilates their consciousness. It's only if you realize how dead you are and how disappeared you've been made that you can begin to comprehend the solution to the problem. So we have to wake up the bad news, even though we can laugh at it and we don't believe in it, as a total perspective.
Well,
you're
only made obsolete, depending on how conscious you are of your place in the whole environment.
Yeah, okay, I agree with that, yeah. That's what I just said, is that you...
So that basically if you turn off that world, then you're not obsolete anymore. If you're not feeling those psychic pressures from the electronic environment, then you're no longer obsolete because you're not participating in it, or you don't believe in that myth anyway.
Are you claiming to have none of these pressures registered in your consciousness?
They're there, but there's all kinds of factors you can do to tune it out.
Okay, let's hear some.
There's different things you can do, basically, by creating your own world. I wrote you that letter a couple of weeks ago that suggested a couple of them.
Yeah.
Of the creative process being inverted by the electric environment. And what it should do is flow from a state to outwardly, and instead it's being turned back on ourselves so that the environment outside ourselves is programming us to create backwards instead of from our own private citadel of consciousness outwards. So the outcome of the creative process has become important rather than the creative process itself. Whether that creative process is writing a piece of music or writing a book or a painting, whatever it is, right?
Well, I distinguish the private citadel of consciousness from what the work of Bob is. The private citadel of consciousness is not affected by media, not affected by anything that man creates. I'd say the private citadel of consciousness is what people call the first cause, God.
Okay, well, yeah, okay. Well, that's what I'm getting at. So then if you're centered in that private citadel of consciousness, then how are you being made obsolete by the electric environment?
See, if you know that the private citadel consciousness is indestructible, and you can ignore it, and you can be human. See, you're talking from the point of view of being godlike, and subgenesis don't want to be godlike. They want to be human. They want to have the problems of humans, and they want to be able to explore them, develop solutions, and then screw up the solutions and keep being human by, stepping on our own toes.
Did James Joyce have the problem of being human?
Yeah, yeah. See, he dealt with the artifacts of man and woman. He dealt with what we made.
But yet, didn't he churn out his work from that private citadel of consciousness?
No. He knew he had that. That's why he could be reckless. And from those who still are doubting whether they have one or not and have no faith in their private citadel of consciousness, still wrestle with those things, whether there's a God or not, or those old religious issues or mystical issues, whether they are immortal or not. To the subgenius, that's not a problem anymore. They know they've got it. And so they celebrate, like Jesus, the flesh. You know, the human dimension. They celebrate the problems.
Well, they can interact together, the human. Like, just because you're centered in the private citadel of consciousness doesn't necessarily mean that you're backing away from human involvement.
You are if you're making your own world. Now, we do advocate making and hallucinating, but we do it with an extreme sensitivity to the other person's hallucinations and making, too.
Well, isn't that what you're talking about when you're saying be outside the body and at the same time explore the inner worlds, is that you can explore that human aspect and at the same time the private citadel of consciousness. So you can be...
No, the inner world is not the private citadel of consciousness. The inner world is acoustic space. The outer world is visual space. Tactility is the interplay of both of them, and the electric environment is extended tactility so that we can... It's kind of gone around the dialectic between inner and outer. So both inner and outer can be exchanged, and we can confuse those issues. But they're not in the realm of... See, I'm talking about language. I'm language about language. The private citadel of consciousness is before and after the word, before a human artifact. You can look in McLuhan's Counterblast. You've got that book.
Yeah.
And you look, I don't know what page it's on, where he says none of the media affect the private citadel of consciousness. So he's not talking about that. We're talking about human inventions, which... the creator left for us to deal with.
Well, what are these psychic pressures putting pressure on if they're not putting pressure on that private citadel of consciousness, which is, to me, the most important aspect of the individual?
It's the most important aspect of all of us. It's not an individual. It appears private and appears individualized, but it's the same thing. It's the first pre-nature, the thing we all have, and there's no problem with that. What human artifacts deal with is relationships. You can't see any human object itself alone. It only exists in relationship with other objects. So these objects create tensions and interplay and interface that lead to stresses and releases. So if you have a new electric environment that drives the stresses inward, and it has to deal with the former human artifact of the mechanical externalized environment, then the stresses between those two environments made by humans are the point that this language is dealing with. The points, the process.
I guess it's more, it's the, you know, the terms, the semantics of, you know, or my not knowing exactly what you're talking about when you speak of the private citadel of consciousness, because to me, that citadel is exactly what's... putting pressure back on the electric environment through the creative process, which is most important. Instead of people being numbed, they can actually outflow and have some effect themselves. Rather than being the effect, they can cause some outward change.
Yeah, they can do that if they ignore the private sigil. And you ignore it by having complete faith that it'll be there always to back on. In other words, you never could get totally upset by the problems you're dealing with or the solutions you're coming up with in the man-made human world. Because you know that in the end, it disappears inside the private sigil of consciousness. But it's the human prerogative to ignore that. That's why, you know, conflict and war and fun and absurdity and laughter will always be the province of humans. That's why in the movie Wings of Desire, the angels are jealous of man, of humankind. Because ultimately, this is the best place to be.
It's more fun.
Yeah, and it's more painful. And you can feel more. The private sigil of conscience doesn't feel anything. You know, the Eastern religions.
But you just said that all feelings, all emotions are obsolete.
That's right. Well, under the language of electric conditions. See, the old, what we call, in other words, the old words are obsolete. The words, emotions, and that refer to old categories, old situations that have terms that don't apply within the new electric language. And the electric language is something that's really hard to talk about, to express. That's why fashions turn over so fast, because they're trying to embrace the electric language and it can't be done. So, therefore, we have constant fill-in and rapid transitions in all forms of institutional life.
All right.
So
what's happening down there with the U.S. and South America and the Vatican protecting Noriega? What's going on with that? I heard he was on the CIA payroll. And he's not going to be brought to trial because George Bush is too paranoid.
Yeah, now, isn't it interesting that he goes to the Vatican? Now, the Vatican's an institution that hijacks the private sigil of consciousness. Right?
Right.
They claim to have a monopoly on that. And that's why, in the end, Pinks will go to that institution, because it ultimately reflects their lack of faith. If Noriega was a real sub-genius, he would have stayed underground, because he would have had the faith that he never would have been bothered if he believed in this private sigil of consciousness. But no, he had to go to the Pink institution. So there's an example of someone who might have been a sub-genius earlier in the decade, but things changed. He couldn't handle the Bob rule, which turned into mob rule in his regime. So Bob rule is the test on whether you can handle the electric language and put me in jail and see if I can still be happy. Or in a sense of happy, in a sense of having energy. You know, energy is what it's about in the human dimension. There's no energy on the private sigil conscious level. That thing is, that's just pure. It's pure nothingness. Then that's...
It's a void?
Yeah.
Oh, I disagree.
It's
a
pulsating.
It's a pulsating energy rather than a void. A void means that there's nothing there. But
it's not human energy. That's the thing. It's energy, but it's not human energy. It can't be perceived.
It can be utilized by humans, though. And I think that it can be perceived.
Okay, tell me how it can be utilized. Other than what I just said, is that as a ground for faith, that everything's okay.
Well, to create something in that way, it can be. To tap into some aspect of creativity, which
I
see more as an acoustic space. So if you're going to write a composition or paint a picture, you got to see it first in your mind's eye. And that has to do with that energy force, which hasn't expressed itself, but is dying to be expressed. So it finds vehicles to express itself.
Yeah, that's the subgenius human level. Why do you emphasize creativity? What's that word mean to you? I mean, creativity comes in all forms. It doesn't just come in a painting or a record player or something.
Yeah, but I think that it's most important because the electric environment is damming us up, preventing us from...
There was just disconnection there. Now listen, you're saying it's damning us. You know what we're the most creative in? Where every human being is his most creative when he's sleeping, and it's dreaming. Now we're confused today is that we are dreaming awake, okay? So everybody becomes obsessed with creativity, subconsciously forgetting that they are dreaming constantly, privately, and being creative. And then the confusion, when they actually perceive that paradox, then they start expressing and talking and analyzing their dreams. Even Prince Charles does that. And that's a privatization of the collective analysis of her dreams, which is done every day on the television. That's a dreaming awake situation. That's what they call news.
A lot of the inventions by the inventors were created that way, too. There's a few examples where people dreamed of it, and then, you know, scientists, Alexander Graham Bell, different people had dreams, and then they were able to manifest that dream.
But it seems to me you make a religion out of creativity. I mean, that's what everybody wants to do today, is be creative. So we have to be suspicious of that, because the general mainstream has been hijacked by the pinks, and if they advocate a certain activity, a certain human activity, and it becomes agreed upon, then we certainly, subgenius, do not want to participate on that. I don't think subgenius would be creative today.
Why? Why is that?
Because the pinks have hijacked the concept of creativity. And therefore, you do know that they... That North America is going into captivity under the idea of creating a situation for entrepreneurial creativity? I mean, they use that term to hype up their prison they're building here in North America. So we, anybody, you know, from Jung through Freud to even McLuhan, McLuhan was hip to this. He said creativity was the biggest cliche of the 20th century. And so you can't be really creative unless you get rid of the pink concepts of what creativity is. So I wouldn't even use the word creativity if I was trying to wake up something valuable, which is what you're doing. You're trying to talk about something that's very valuable that we can do as private subgeniuses, and that's what it is. But I wouldn't use that word. What? Think of another word to use.
But why is it always being hijacked? It sounds like a really...
Because, first of all, because language, verbal language and categories are obsolete. So they're hijacked and solidified because the real creativity is hidden in the new electric language, which is a situation we're all in. And if the pinks cannot control the electric environment, they've got to hoik up the old languages.
But that doesn't mean that you or anyone as a human being is being controlled by the electric environment. It doesn't mean that, you know, your creativity's been hijacked because somebody, some mastermind in the electric environment or in the conspiracy, insists that that term is obsolete.
Yeah, that's right. That's true. I agree with that. That's what I'm trying to say.
Oh. Hmm. Okay.
But back to your, since maybe we come to a fake agreement there, why don't we go back to your original thing, why I wake up top-down analysis, is that... humans don't exist on the planet anymore. It's just media environments as the actors. So therefore, you can suspect that all power is centralized around an image of a human being. So therefore, you got to remind people of the baby powder in their eyes and get them past the images of local people in power and point to the founding top of the obsolete pyramid of the image of power, where it is, so then they can then not be fooled by the subsidiary developments of those conspiracies. And it's also something that works. It's something that's not allowed to be talked about too much on the pink media, so to hoik up a sense of uniqueness, we have to create that kind of information. But we certainly don't identify with it and don't think that's our purpose of informing. We don't want to match just with that idea. But I told you privately that as the pinks get more confused, we will have to take over political responsibility. And it's our task is to bring in subgenius politics, which will be something different than the pink politics.
Okay. Thanks, Bob.
No.
No?
Do you think we should let him off, Mike? Okay, Dave. Listen, I know you're going to get some more thoughts right after you
hang up.
So you call later if you want to come in with a new angle, okay?
The political scene. Well, it just seems to me that most people don't have much concern or interest in what's happening in international politics. They sort of go around thinking that it's a corrupt scene.
Because they don't live in those environments. They live in the solar government, the universal government level. They don't live on the planet. Therefore, the political scene looks pretty dirty, and it has been hijacked by pink mafias.
Yeah, so in a lot of ways, your show is just confirming the fact that it is, on any level, it's a dirty, corrupt scene. It's, you know, a bunch of greedy, selfish, power-tripping people that will corrupt, you know, make you a cynical person.
Yeah, that's what they'll do. But how come everybody tunes in and listens to Barbara Frum every night?
Well, I tune in and listen to Bob Dobbs.
Yeah, but see, you've been freed. You've been free, but we can't forget the ones who haven't been.
Okay. Well, I'll tell some of those people that tune into the church.
Yeah, you tell them that there's corruption pouring out of CBC, you know, slime from the TV, that we might have to shoot anybody who watches CBC. You know, if it's true they're reporting on this evil, then let's be honest about it consistently every day and remind people. You watch the trouble you get into if you try that.
All right, Bob.
Okay.
Okay. Oh, one more other quick question.
Yeah.
Supposedly, you worked down there in Dallas with Reverend Stang.
Yeah.
Why is it that he had no knowledge of your favorite Holy Office Marshal McLuhan if you guys worked together for a couple of years there? He didn't include anything in his book.
Because he's an American, and Americans never understood Marshal McLuhan. Only Canadians do, and only a few at that.
Okay.
No, there is a difference on that level. Americans have no knowledge of... they promoted Marshal McLuhan, but they didn't understand him. He was too close to describing what they were. So it was an invisible...
What, pinks?
Yeah.
Okay.
All right?
Good.
Thanks for the food.
Yeah, maybe I'll call back.
Okay.
Thanks, Bob.
Okay.
See ya.
All right. So that was a long talk, Mike. 595-1478.
I don't mind letting you rant on.
Good, thanks.
Dave is a good regular caller. So.
Yeah, he's a good challenger. He helps define what we're dealing with. Why don't we play my predictions, the tape, the interview. It's only a few minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Just for the record, that if you stay tuned to this show, maybe we'll talk about it, what's going to happen in the 90s. But certainly this interview, it's not me live in the sense of this show. I'm not in dialogue and interacting in live electric air. It's on tape. It was taped interview. It was played... played without my actual presence there, so this is the first broadcasting of a Bob Dobbs interview in North America. So this is Bob Dobbs in 1988, October 16th, predicting the pattern of 1989.
Okay, and we're at the halfway point of the show. It's the final show of the year. We're recapping the year in our own indicative way. My name is Michael Dyer with J.R. Bob Dobbs, the Church of the Subgenius. And Bob, you have a...
Yeah, it's the one with the thin white band on it. Is that the tape you got up there? Yeah, okay, good.
Everything's a door question, Bob.
It's dark over there.
I know, it's okay.
Yeah, thanks.
So let's play this tape again if you have any input or thoughts on what's gone on in the past year, 595-1478. But give us a call after you hear these... predictions.
And I'd like to show you the surfaces of the situation, the fact that Gorbachev has two-thirds of the world working for him. We're going to have a Fortress America situation, including Canada, and that's why Canada, they have to have the free trade, to bring Canada in and make an easier movement among, you know, this continent, as we are shifted into an isolationist position. And that's why the Bolsheviks, who are fanatically hope to regain their power as a dream, need to have an island state to operate like they had done to Russia and to China, okay? So this island state fortress state mentality will occupy America. And the average American citizen who's used to mobility around the world and traveling is going to find his situation crimped more and more. It's like what Frank Zappa says, he sees a fascist theocracy. That'll be because the Bolsheviks want to alienate America from the rest of the world, because they know Gorbachev controls that part, most of Germany. They have secret deals with West Germany and promises to reunite Germany. That's going to happen. They've taken over the old Rockefeller Empire in Latin America, and they have moved into the old Rockefeller Empire in Africa. So you have Gorbachev is beginning to set up two-thirds of the planet for his solar government, which they hope the particular Skopsy plan is to move out into space. They believe in contact with extraterrestrial intelligence. They've researched the that damaged region in Siberia from 1908, Tunguska or something, Tunguska, I think it's called, where they've proven that it was an atomic effect there, and that it was some foreign object from another planet. They want to move out and make contact with this, whatever civilizations are out there. Now, they are not fanatically, centralistically, monopolistically empire desirous like the Rockefellers and Bolsheviks were, which may have come out of an effect of print media, newspaper media, and radio. They are more hip to the decentralized mode of television. They are interested in allowing every country to develop in its own form of government. In other words, what the scenario was that America would allow and protect people to develop. Well, America's lost its role in that way at this point. But Russia, under Gorbachev, will take over that role and will allow these countries to blossom in their own particular unique way, but they will be subsumed within the Soviet space empire. In other words, they will obey orders out there, you know what I mean? But they will not hassle them locally. So you're seeing more and more business operations linking up with Russia. Even certain elements of America are operating over with Russia, which is the old Rockefeller thing. You have that cooperation over space stuff that's going on. All right? So, with Gorbachev pretty well beaming because he's a winner, he can't lose. He can knock out all the old Bolsheviks. Like, he finally, he made a big coup. It's all over for any Bolshevik traces in Russia with the kicking out of Gromyko and those guys a few weeks ago. That is, you know, for us, if you're a subgenius and you will celebrate this, you know, you will maybe want to get out of Russia, out of the United States. But you know that in the long run, the rest of the world is going to be saved by Gorbachev, and that's an expression of my work, because I saved the world a few years ago, and then Gorbachev is working for me. But the thing is that it's going to be sad, and it's karmically appropriate in North America. We are going to be in more of a prison environment here, and it's a very vicious situation. It's not too hopeful unless we keep me on the air and expand my voice like you're doing here. There is a chance, because I'm operating, you know, I've infiltrated this North American fortress, and I operate out of Toronto now. So this UFO interest that you saw the other night, they are now exposing the UFO cover-up. Did you see that thing on TV, the national thing? That is, you're going to see a lot of UFO cover-up. The UFO truth is going to come out, which is about my associates, the Exes. All right, it's speeding up. You're going to see incredible news in July 1989 about extraterrestrial intelligence. It's going to surprise everybody.
So what is, in a nutshell, what is Slack self-explanatory?
No, Slack is not understood. It cannot be verbalized. It can only be shared under electric conditions, live on the air.
It seems to be kind of the word itself, the choice of the word itself, seems sort of hinting at self-explanation.
Yes. There are a lot of normal popular culture interpretations of the slang term Slack, but that's usually filtered through pink sensibilities. But real Slack is an effect of the resonating electromagnetic energy of the white light. You guys all experience white light on acid, right? And many people experience it in various mystical experiences over the last 20 years. Now, the thing is that electricity is an extension of that resonating electromagnetic energy, the white light. In other words, the white light came to the planet once the telegraph environment was set up. And that wiped out the cobwebs of original sin, original separateness from the bobhead. And that energy was set up as an environment since 1850, and it's been overlaid with various new technological extensions of our central nervous system, our central resonating electromagnetic energy down in your thalamus, that part you see when you take drugs. That thing has been externalized as an environment, and that environment is me, is Bob. I am the resonating electric magnetic energy, the first, second, third, fourth dimensions. I am the externalization of that, and it is magnified when I am on live electric technology.
That's it.
Yep. Sound good?
Yeah. And where was that? Was in, that was here, or was that in?
No,
California?
That was in Los Angeles, in Jerry Fialka's backyard. Mm-hmm. Zappa's office manager, employee, butler. Zappa's butler. It was in his backyard where we had the improper environment with the X's circulating over, you know, just there monitoring the...
I could hear them.
You know, just monitoring, making sure nothing happened to me, because rarely I'm encountered in person. We got a call.
Yeah, let's go to this call. Hello? Hello?
Hello?
Hi.
Is that me?
That's you.
Oh, this is a funny sound effect. I'm not sure what I wanted to call about. That McLuhan, he said it was a global village because of television. And he said that there was a distinct change from radio to television, two different mentalities. He talked about an oral culture where the voice, the speaking, the heartbeat, the memory operating as in terms of remembered words, speaking, singing, things like that. He said that characterized the radio environment, and that the television brought the visual immediacy, which made it a global village. But what you're saying is that the telegraph brought the electricity, which was the immediacy. So you must be right, because Albert Einstein said we had space-time. We had three dimensions, but we were moving through the fourth one, which was time. And then Jean-Paul Sartre said that the human being is a project in four dimensions, that is in space-time. A project which is conscious of itself and capable of modifying itself as it progresses through space-time. But Sartre really said that, and the telegraph came before the television brought us the immediacy, the visual immediacy, that was the superficial interpretation of what McLuhan said. Now today, Romania has finally brought in laws, this is really odd, allowing birth control and abortion, which is terrific. That was reported on the news 2 hours ago. I don't really have an opinion on that, but it was pointed out earlier today on the news that 30% of their population is under the age of 15, that they've been artificially kept at the farmer-peasant level. Now, as I see it, the little TV they've seen, they haven't really seen it the way we see it, with all the screens we've got. They see it the way the telegraph saw it, the way Jean-Paul Sartre saw it, the way the original electric impulse brought it to everybody, because I saw it long, long, long before I watched TV. And I followed it, and I knew it. I knew everything was coming ahead of time. But now we've got it. Now, if you give the Romanians the Jap technology tomorrow, handheld, flat, high-resolution TV screens, which can be put in your pocket, with multi-band, multi-world satellite bounce off every kind of radio, every kind of TV signal. That's the ear coming back in. And this is used as a disposable tool, the way Davy Crockett used his hunting knife to carve his initials on a tree, or to whittle something, or to skin a bear, or whatever. It's put in its proper perspective. The Romanians are held at the point that the English sacrificed in their countryside when the Industrial Revolution commenced. Now, they're given the fresh Jap technology. And I say Jap with all respect. That's no slur there at all, not to my mind, because I see brilliance there. But now, oddly enough, the report this week, but you see, Canadians are discussing life and death. We're talking about population bulge, older population. It's funny that before they've even verified and got photographs of the bodies that Ceausescu buried, they tell us that birth control and abortion is now legal there. That's a reflex impulse on their part. It's a reflex impulse. It's not a CIA conspiracy. It's not Canadian government policy. It's not media policy. It's a queer little reflex.
Yep, you're perfectly accurate there. I agree.
So when you say that we'll be increasingly in a prison, but...
In North America.
Well, no, but you're saying that creativity must go. What you're really saying is we must become more concrete. We must become more confined by our actual physical surroundings. This fits with the environment. We must stop and linger around the bole of a tree, appreciate the texture of its bark, smell its leaves. It takes time to do that. It takes a lot of time to do that. What Lascaux has been doing for 30 years is... We've been razoring through five or six dimensions in our minds. We've been trying to mentally skip through half-understood brilliances and pictures, keeping up with what we think almost happened. Well, you know, if we pay attention to our environment, if we take care of our social problems, it will become a prison. It takes time to educate a child. It takes time to take time out for young people to tell them why they should grow, in order to understand why they should believe you. We can't refer to Jean-Paul Sartre or even the Tunguska explosion. I believe myself it was an object, and that the terrific mass of it, when it stopped abruptly, was converted. It would have to be converted to something like pure heat. I've seen the photographs of the burned trees. It's not a proven thing, but there may not be life out there, but we're going out there. But we have to tell them, as we slow up and avoid bombing each other and accept the opening that Gorbachev has seen and made, we're going to have to go back and tell them once again why and how the ancient Greeks lived and how the early Saxon cultures of England and the mercantile cultures of the 14 and 1500s and how 180 years ago there were 150,000 wooden ships on the Atlantic. We don't make those pictures in the children's minds. Most of the adults have forgotten that the British Isles, Newfoundland, most of our Atlantic provinces and New England were literally stripped of trees to make wooden ships. And we had as many wooden ships almost as we've got steel ships today. But people don't think that. They think it's evolution, that we started off with four ships 500 years ago and we had about 500 ships and we switched to steel. They've got no concept of what people actually did. You see? So I'm not sure where that takes us, kind of, but I can see every single impulse that becomes literate or represented or expressed, or even, they don't say it in plain English, they disguise it in legal terms and that kind of indifference.